Friday, March 18th, was one of those days of sleeping delightfully late, actually getting started about 10 with coffee and juice in my room, talking with Bess, with Helen about the things I need to take on the Big Bend weekend trip. And actually, my accomplishments were zero for the morning. The big event of the day was lunch with the wives of some of the men who do the most for Lyndon and for me. I had asked them for what I hoped would be an intimate, self-indulgent, amusing, get-to-know-you sort of occasion. Bess and Trudy Califano and Liz and Mary Jane Carter and Libby Cater, Mrs. Bob Fleming, Ashton, Clay McPherson, Judith Moyers, Lillian Reedy, Mrs. Roger Stevens, I haven't learned yet to call her Christine, and Mary Margaret, and lovely little Marion Watson, and Christine Stugard. We met at the pool a little past 12, nearly everybody in swimming suits, but not everybody swimming, plentiful Bloody Marys and soft drink. Bess, that natural athlete, was a good swimmer, and Libby Cater, and blonde Marion Watson, in a pleated pink bathing suit, looked right off of a valentine. About 10 of the 15 of us swam or draped around the pool. I did my minimum of 20 laps, and then we went upstairs, borrowed Lucy's quarters, the first time I've ever had a party, in the solarium, and it was absolutely delightful. Beth had a buffet, a yellow-covered table with a beautiful fruit centerpiece, a quiche Lorraine, and that's what we all talked about, two big covered silver dishes with a flame under them, shrimp and lobster, I believe they were, with rice, and a green salad, and a most handsome strawberry dessert. It was a complete change of pace from anything I've ever done in the White House. They made a very relaxed and different atmosphere, and everybody responded by becoming different personalities. It wasn't as good as Camp David for the purpose I had in mind, but it was the right tempo for getting to know you better. The husbands of so many of these women have given such long hours. I wanted a few hours of intimacy, of saying thanks, of listening to their stories, particular the new Mrs. Bob Fleming, Mary Jane Carter, who's been with us so long but whom we see so seldom, and the same for Lillian Reedy, Mrs. Roger Stevens, who just brushes the periphery of our lives, but whose husband adds a certain luster in a segment of the society that we don't touch much. Along with dessert, we began telling stories, and Christine Stugard came up with some delightful ones about the mail, particularly what our young correspondents ask. One youthful art student had written in, "Dear Mrs. Johnson, will you please tell me why Michelangelo's Moses has horns?" I hope she looked it up for him. I couldn't have answered it. Bess told them about the discreet, efficient, pleasant White House operators who are always trying to protect us, to play detective for us. You do such a wonderful job, really. And then one night when she was trying to put a show together, she, Bess, received a telephone call from an harassed White House operator who said she had a party on the line who kept on insisting that he was Gregory Peck. The operator thought it was pure hoax, but no, that's just who Bess needed at the moment. Lucy's finger drawing left on the picture window from her birthday party, the shelves of beer mugs from many colleges, the funny pictures, all stamp it as Lucy's room, and a few of them, Ashton especially, have shared it with Lucy. When they left a little after 3, I thought it had been a good idea that had gone over about grade B, not better, though all of Bess's stage setting was A+. There is a chemistry, a catalytic effect, that the hostess alone can provide. I tried, but I didn't quite get the firecrackers going. One of the nice moments was to discuss with Libby Cater the redecorating on the 3rd floor. I'd had the loveliest letter from her. She's one of my favorites in this really very attractive group of young people. And then into Ashton's office to listen to Lucy read her birthday note to Linda, the burden of which is live, live, live. She's sending it out by our special messenger, Woody, on what we call his planes, American Airlines, the great mass of eye makeup, which she obviously doesn't think Lindbergh will really know how to use. Just as I sent out my inaugural coat, I spent the next hour trying on clothes with Bess and Helen, hymns, decision, accessories. What a bore. A little work with Ashton and signing of mail. Liz, of all things, had a call from Linda and George. It was a sort of an SOS. George says, "It's another Alamo. We were besieged on all sides. Their problem was, he was having a cocktail party for something over 100 Hollywood personalities. Introduced Linda Bird to them. How should he handle the press? Liz, really pleased, I think, they should call on her. Linda Bird doesn't often do that. Suggested that when Linda was all dressed, they go to the front door or the front gate, some pretty place of their choice, and give them 5 minutes to take pictures. And then that some responsible, discreet person, perhaps George himself, come out once or twice, perhaps at the end of the evening, and tell them a little bit about the party. Not let them inside, not make a Roman circus of it, but afford them some help. Later on, I felt apparently it had worked, because the pictures, the stories, were all delightful. In this most unpredictable and often cruel and kooky city, my little Linda Bird fared very well. There was one sad moment when Anne Han called to say goodbye to me. She and Lloyd, and Kathy and Bridget and Thomas and Lloyd and Susan, had all packed up and left in one day's time to go back to California, where Lloyd is going to run for lieutenant governor. I felt a bit hurt, a bit sad, to say goodbye to them so swiftly, for the state dinner coming up. This is a once-in-a-lifetime chance for him. I knew I must think of that first, and I want Lyndon to. But they're gone, and I feel that I have let a year pass in which I didn't come close enough to them and really express my appreciation for them being a part of the team. That I could do and not depend on Lyndon. So I hope I will learn. It had been a very hard day for Lyndon. It was after 8 when we talked, and he said, let's have somebody quiet and easy over to eat with us. I reminded him that most people ate by this time, and sure enough, when I called the Deasons, they had already had dinner, but they came to sit with us and have coffee and dessert and keep Lyndon company. They came about 9. It was one of those decelerating times when Lyndon comes down off of the mountain, so to speak. We talked about people who'd been in the NYA, where they are now, about our various families of beagles, where the decent children are going to college. And when Lyndon went in to have a massage and Bill accompanied him to talk, I said, Jeannie, come on in while I get a rub, too. It's wonderful to have friends that you can feel that close around. But it was an early night, a day of trying, and not very much achievement.